Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest sports columnist.
You ain't gotta do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. He ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interview. I know. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. 'Cause I make you ugly as soon as it drops. We're on a rampage, bottles popping up before you know it. There's rubber and dust, 'cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say you
I, by the way, now have my own microphone, like my own, you call it a windshield, right, Jeffrey?
Windscreen.
Windscreen, called a windscreen. It's the little foamy thing that goes over the microphone.
Indeed.
And so I got my own personal little foamy thing.
We all do.
We all have our own. Mm-hmm. We've been, and we are essential services. Today is a historic day in the city of Memphis and in surrounding areas because it is the day starting at 6 p.m. when we are being directed to remain safer at home. Unless you are grocery shopping or unless you are engaged in one of the essential services that are listed in the mayor's directive, you are told to stay home. You can walk your dog. You can go for a run. The parks are open. Please stay far away from one another, however. And that's where we are. It is an historic day for the city of Memphis. And there are those out there who are inclined to not take this seriously. And there are those out there who are even starting to push back and say, come on, man, seriously? We're destroying our economy over this? And so in the interest of explaining why maybe this is something that we should take seriously and why the mayor actually took this second step, if he had already closed down restaurants and whatnot and told us to maintain social distancing, but why this so suddenly and urgently, I bring on a friend of the show from Church Health, Scott Morris. Scott rejoins us now. Morris, Scott, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I guess that's an odd question. So I think there are those out there who will say, yeah. Safe at home, whatever. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And are rolling their eyes at this. It's interesting. All the stories say that with Jim Strickland that this is a data-driven decision. Can you explain what went into this decision and why people should take it seriously?
Yeah, so this is absolutely a data-driven issue. I am not, by any stretch of the imagination, a Chicken Little person who is saying the sky is falling and the sky is not falling. But I hope everybody listening understands that there is no point of waiting until 6 o'clock tonight to shelter in place. You need to do this minute. And here's why. So this is all complicated. And if you're not used to thinking in these terms, it's why it gets really hard. But if we were to just let things go forward and not take social distancing seriously, I'm looking at a model projection right now about what would happen in Memphis. Not what would happen in New York, not what would happen in California, what would happen in Memphis. So the potential of the number of people who would die just in the moderate range. You know, this is not a worst case scenario. I'm going to tell you what the worst case scenario would be as well. But just in the moderate range, the number of people who would die in Memphis over the next 3 months would be 1,891. That's 1,891 people. There would be 18,909 hospitalizations. There would be almost 10,000 people admitted to the intensive care unit. So how is that a problem? It's because our healthcare system can't possibly care for that many people. Now, if you want to know what the worst case scenario is, this would be like if everybody out there who just blows this off and says, forget the social distancing, you know, doesn't take it seriously, over 8,000 people could die. There could be 40,000 people admitted to the intensive care unit, which we can't even remotely think about what that would mean in Memphis. All those pictures of Italy, that could be Memphis.
Let me, first of all, I want to reiterate that Scott and I chat back and forth all the time, and Scott is absolutely not a Chicken Little. I heard the president say that doctors would like to shut down the world. Scott, you want to shut down the world? Generally speaking, that's not my impression of you at all. So, Scott, I want to reemphasize, Scott is not an alarmist here. But in terms of some of these numbers, so you say that if we just the moderate course of where this could go is 1,800 dead essentially and 18,000 hospitalized.
Right.
How many hospital beds do we have in the city?
So, you know, the issue of how many beds we have is slightly irrelevant because we can add more beds. All of our hospitals over the last few years have shut down various parts of their bed. They can, you know, putting a bed, that's not an issue.
Right.
What we don't have are people to staff that bed. I mean, you can have a bed and you got a bed at home, just stay at home. But you don't have healthcare personnel to take care of people, then really what's the point?
On a typical universe, then, how many people in Memphis are hospitalized on any given bed?
Yeah, 2,000, a little over 2,000.
At any given moment, right now, before this, 2,000. And what you're saying is in the next 3 months, we could have 18,000 people needing not just the bed, but all of the things that go with a bed, never mind ventilator and all of that stuff. It just swamps what we have. It absolutely would.
Right.
Now, what is this, the middle course that you're talking about, what is that? What sort of social activity is that predicated on? That's not the just blow it off.
Okay, that's predicated on sort of doing what we've been doing just in the last week or two. You know, some people taking it seriously. You know, a lot of people thinking, hey, this doesn't matter. So here's the point I also want to make. This should not surprise anybody who lives in Memphis. Nobody's going to care about Memphis but people who call Memphis their home. You know, the federal government is not coming to our rescue. You know, I don't think the state has the ability to come to our rescue. You know, this is about us taking care of our own and who we are. That means our entire community. You know, this can't just be about people who look like you. This has to be everybody who lives and works and plays and goes to church and calls this our community. So this has to be about us. Now, the second point is there's been a lot of focus on older people. This virus is not just about older people. Again, anybody can get this. It's now looking like younger people at some level can be as vulnerable as older folks. But then I want to get to what's actually the point of me wanting to talk to you today,
yeah,
which is these same modelings. You know, if nothing happens from what we have right now, then the scenario is very bleak. However, if we were to actually take seriously social distancing, the virus can only live for so long without being able to be transferred and replicated in another human being. So if those people who are infected or where the virus already is, if they can quarantine themselves and we don't give the virus the ability to move into another human being, that I am looking at a modeling picture right now that says we can stop this thing in its tracks. It's not that 1,800 people don't die. There is a path out there that nobody dies. But the only way that path is going to happen is if we take social distancing to the nth degree. Everybody needs to have this as their mantra. If it seems like overkill, it is not.
Numbers, people, models, whatever. Is this I don't know if you can say. Like this, by the way, these numbers are why I presume Jim Strickland did what he did. He looked at the future. He saw where the models would take us if we did not change our behavior, and he said, I don't need to wait to see this. I see the storm coming. These numbers, as a data-driven mayor, are why we're doing what we're doing. And I take it you believe in these numbers and where they came from and all of that.
Right. Absolutely. So these numbers were, I mean, we now, look, I'm not, at the beginning, like with anything like this, you know, it took us a little while to figure out who our leadership is and all of this. I am now extremely confident in particularly the two main point people who are driving this medically, who is Dr. Elisa Householter, who's the head of our health department. Elisa's fantastic. We are lucky to have her in Memphis. I know if you watch her on TV, she may come up walking a little dry and she has no sense of humor. We'll deal with that after this is all over. The woman knows what she's doing. Uh-huh. The other person is Dr. Manoj Jain. Dr. Jain's an infectious disease doctor. I mean, I've known Manoj forever. He's worried about stuff like this for 10 years. You know, 10 years ago when the SARS epidemic came out, I was rolling my eyes at Manoj. But not Manoj. This stuff is never going to get that bad. Well, it has gotten that bad, and Manoj is the one driving the numbers around this, crunching the numbers for us, along with, you know, other very smart scientists. And their leadership is what we ought to be following. I can assure you, it is their leadership that our mayors are listening to.
And it's Memphis numbers, and it's a Memphis-specific picture,
right,
that they are looking at. This isn't just handed down. Just to back up one second, Scott, again, talking to Scott Morris from Church Health, remind people, why is this? We heard this again. How many people get the common flu? How many people die of the common flu every year? Why is this not the common flu?
Yeah, great. So those reasons are very important to understand. If you get the flu, on average, a person is going to infect one other person. With the coronavirus, on average, it would appear that person is going to infect three people. Now, the other issue is that once you get the flu, within 2 days, you're going to feel terrible, and you will self-isolate. You'll go home from work. You'll say, oh, my God, I'm sick. Don't come close to me. But with the coronavirus, you can be doing well for a week or so. And as a result, you are still spreading the virus. And you are going to spread the virus not just to one other person, but on average, it would appear that you're going to spread it to at least, you know, 3 to 5, maybe more people. So that's an issue of how more people get it. But then the other big issue is the mortality rate. 0.1%, you know, that's effectively 1 out of 1,000 people will die if they get the flu. It would appear at this point that 2 out of 100 will die if they get coronavirus. So 2%, maybe that doesn't sound like a lot to you, but, you know, that is a lot more than 0.1%.
And an even higher percentage, have to be hospitalized, which gets us back to the issue before with the 18,000 hospital beds or hospital people will be hospitalized if we just keep doing what we are doing. All right. And where are we on testing now, Scott? Are you comfortable with where we are on testing?
Look, we have a plan on testing. The problem is we don't have enough supplies. I mean, I think our plan on how to test, it makes all the sense in the world. But the issue is we don't have enough PPE, the gowns and things that the doctors and nurses would wear. We don't have enough viral transport media. We don't have enough Dacron swabs, those things that they're sticking up people's nose. We don't have enough of them. We will run out of them soon. And again, this is the point. We cannot assume, no matter what you see on TV, that the federal government is going to get that to Memphis. At this point, I think we have to assume that is not going to come in time. They may send it to us in September, but we need it now. The testing issue, we are getting up and running drive-through test units. The UT will be running a test unit at Tiger Lane. They sort of practiced yesterday. Today that ought to be up and running. The only way you can go there, though, you can't just go, is you have to have symptoms. You have to be have a doctor's order to get it done, which comes down to probably one of the most important things. Based on our limited ability to have all the things we need, which is if you are asymptomatic, you feel fine, at this point, do not try to get yourself tested, because you are going to be using up the PPE, viral medium, all the stuff we need for people who are actually sick. There's an element that is counterintuitive. If we had enough stuff, then yeah, everybody needs to be tested. But we don't have enough stuff, and it is not coming. We at Church Health are trying to find ways to get PPE from China. We haven't been successful
yet. To try to get protective equipment for your people. Is that right?
Basically? Yes, right. From the healthcare providers, because once the healthcare providers get sick, then who's going to take care of everybody?
What do you now use for protective equipment?
Well, we have enough for right today.
I see you do. Yeah, okay. You don't have for... all right. Well, again, so the message is, take this seriously, folks. You don't have to wait until 6 p.m. You can shelter and should absolutely shelter in place now, and that it is up to us as a community. Think about this as a Memphis issue and a Memphis solution, and let's get at it. Scott, thanks very much. I appreciate for everything you do. Any other final thoughts before we let you go? We appreciate it.
Well, I do want to say one more thing. So If you're a member of a faith community, this is an example of where churches can offer things more than just prayers. Get front and center on this message to your church, your Sunday school, your synagogue, your whatever. I mean, if you are connected to any type of group like that, spread this message, because this is what will save lives and keep Memphis whole.
Thanks very much, Scott. I appreciate it.
Take care, Jeff.
Yeah, that is Scott Morris from Church Health. Today on the show, by the way, and Scott particularly asked if he could come on today. I try not to bother him, I'll be honest, because he's truly saving lives. I can joke that this job is essential. Scott's job is essential. So I try not to bother him to come on often. But he asked in this instance particularly to come on because he has this suspicion that all of the people who listen to sports talk radio, which is now no longer sports talk radio, that is not exclusively sports talk radio, it is talk radio, that all of y'all are not taking this 100% seriously. And so he wanted to get that message out. He wanted to have you spread that message to the folks who you're in contact with, and the groups and the Facebook groups and the faith communities and everything else. Today on the show, we are going to be joined by Gary Parrish in the next segment. And then we're going to be joined by Chris Harrington. And then we are going to be joined by Jessica Benson. So it is a highly full show. But I'm going to continue this first segment. Is going to be, we're going to try to focus on the issue of the day, and it's where we are. And so we're going to bring in my friend, journalist Charles Fishman from Washington, D.C., to talk about it from more of a national perspective. Charles, how are you?
I'm really good. Happy to be talking to Memphis this morning. Hello, yeah. Memphis.
We're okay. So where are we right now, Charles?
Well, I guess I want to, I was thinking about this morning, and I guess I want to tell a little story, which is, you know, we used to try and predict the weather without being able to look down on the earth. The first satellites weren't launched until the 60s. And actually, the first thing we did with satellites was to start trying to understand the weather. And I think we've all had the experience of knowing that a huge storm, a wave of tornadoes, I lived in Miami, a hurricane, is coming, and being outside 12 hours before it arrives, and it's the most spectacular, beautiful, sunny day. Same with blizzards and ice storms. And I actually often, at a moment like that, look around and think, I'm really glad it's not 1917, because we wouldn't know what was bearing down on us and we wouldn't be ready. And I'm grateful that we've developed ways of kind of looking into the future when it comes to the weather. And no one watches the Weather Channel and scoffs and says, yeah, but Joe, who fixes my car, says it's all ridiculous crap. The storm's not coming. Look at the sky. We say, wow, look at that. Here it comes. And the people who are helping us with this pandemic, with this outbreak of disease, they are exactly like weather forecasters. Most of us may not have any experience with people who treat these kind of diseases, but this is what they do. They're not amateurs. They're not alarmists. They're just like weather forecasters. They're there to say, we know what happens. Even though it hasn't happened to you yet, it's coming, just like the blizzard's coming or the hurricane's coming. So here's where we are. This is the second week, the very start of the second week, in which we're waiting for our stay-at-home, our social distancing, to take hold. That order, really, that practice, really took hold a week ago Monday, last Monday, and kind of a week ago Sunday. That's when the country really started to say, this is serious, we better stay home. What we're seeing now in the United States yesterday, 10,000 new cases of coronavirus were confirmed. Those cases were born 2 weeks ago. And so, and we're now at 600 deaths, and we added 170 deaths just yesterday. Deaths doubled in 3 days. These curves are
going to
go.
Hey, Charles, let me stop for a second. This connection is not great. I don't know what, it's not awful, okay, but it's not the best.
Okay, you want to try me back?
We're going to try you right back. We're going to try this again.
Okay.
Jeffrey, again, the headline today, And I just wanted to, I don't know this stuff any better than y'all, right? It's not. And so when Scott wants to come on and talk and explain what is happening and what we can do and why to take it seriously, that's the central message of today. And so, but then from Charles, I think the other thing that is happening right now is there is a lot of pushback, and I don't know how to parse it in terms of figuring out how do you quote unquote balance the economy and our measures to try to control the coronavirus. So we're going to get to that next. All right, Charles, you're back. How are you?
I'm back.
Okay. So anyway, so where are we today then?
So we've got another really bad 4 or 5 days. And look, I'm really worried about the economy. I think throwing all these people out of work, you know, I live in Washington, D.C., you're in Memphis, Maryland announced yesterday they're closing all businesses that aren't essential. New York is closed, California is closed. This is a level of intensity we've never seen. Let's be clear. The way out, the fast way out, isn't for Donald Trump to be impatient and say, everybody go back to work. That's not safe, and it will result in yet more economic pain. The way out is testing. If we could produce not a million tests, but literally a billion tests, if we could produce tests the way we produce pregnancy tests or flu tests or strep tests, so that everybody in the whole country could be tested in the next month, then we would know where the virus was. And maybe, in fact, in Kansas, it's okay for everybody to resume normal activities because there's not much virus there. And maybe we test everybody once a week. That doesn't cost anything compared to closing California, right? But we didn't do it. We didn't get ready. The economic pain we're feeling now is because we are literally flying blind. We are only testing people who are sick. And that's not the way out, is to be able to assure people that they aren't sick and the person next to them in the restaurant or at work also isn't sick.
Well, what struck me, I don't know if you heard Scott Morris, but he basically said, we don't have enough testing. We don't expect to have enough testing. We're not going to have enough testing. The plan is fine, but we don't have enough stuff. We're running out of the swabs. We're running out of the protective equipment that the people have to wear to administer the tests. That's why we're doing the safer at home, strict social distancing, and shutting down Memphis is so important. It's because we just don't have it, and we're not going to have it. He basically just said, we're not going to have it. It is odd to me that that's not the emphasis. Like, the emphasis isn't, we once produced how many bombers a day in order to defeat Germany, right? And if this is really a war on the coronavirus, why can't we produce that many tests to defeat the coronavirus? It just seems insane to me that every day isn't about let's ramp up the testing, because if we were to discover, as you point out, that Bismarck, North Dakota didn't have any of this, Bismarck, North Dakota, those people could go to the restaurants and whatever else. I guess what struck me about the whole thing yesterday was there was this return to, it's just the flu, and we don't shut down for the flu. It's just car accidents, and we don't shut. More people die of car accidents, and we don't shut down our car accidents. And so we're just gonna. This has been an interesting 2-week period of shutting down the country, and come next Monday, we're gonna put it behind us. America wasn't built to be shut down. We're going to reopen. I guess my question is: all right, so they say that. Let's just say next Monday, Trump says, open for business, go back to your lives, people. What happens?
Well, yeah, there's no they. There's no person in the whole country, and there's no person with deep experience understanding these epidemics and then managing them who says next Monday is the end of 15 days, and on Tuesday everything will be normal. So it's only
they is Donald Trump. Only, I'm just saying they is that's the course, right? They suggest they say they're going to take, and others will say, right. I've had lots of people say, yay, let's do that because we got to crank this baby up again. However many people right. die, whatever, it's too bad, but we can't be America, and we weren't built here to be shut down. I guess my point's twofold.
Well, I think I would say two things in response. It's the wrong kind of leadership. The right kind of leadership is just what you said. We want to get the country going. We produced for 3 years, I just happen to know these figures, we produced literally 40,000 bombers a year, 1,000 a week, every week for 3 years, 1,000 airplanes a week, every week for 3 years. We could certainly figure out how to produce tests that would liberate us back to safety. But we need, that's why we have a federal government. We need the federal government to say, this is the priority. Who, show me a list of every factory that might be able to do this. We're going to get them to do it. I don't care if you're making pocket calculators or you're making pregnancy tests. Now you're going to make this. That you can't leave people to do that on their own because they don't know whether they're necessary or not. What will happen if Trump takes the lectern next Monday and says we're open for business tomorrow is nothing will actually happen. The governor of New York, the governor of Ohio, the governor of Washington, the governor of California, they actually have authority over their own states in that way. And no one is going to put their citizens at risk just because of a certain impatience in Washington. They're going to assess the situation. Washington State is 2 weeks ahead of New York. So in Washington State, things may be calming down. A week from now, New York is going to be much more chaotic than now. And you wouldn't want to, if you let everybody go back to work in New York next Tuesday, a healthcare system that by next Monday will be struggling to survive, you'll create a huge tidal wave of yet more patients because the sickness will still be out there. And so I think people right at ground level, you just don't turn the economy back on in a situation like this without regard to safety. And you know what? Companies aren't going to go back to work. Companies aren't going to bring a whole skyscraper floor full, you know, the 38th floor of the Citibank building in New York. Come on back, all 300 of you. We're good. The president said we're good because they're going to be worried about their own business, their ability to do work, and about making their own people sick. And so people aren't just going to say, okay, we're ready to go until it's clear that we are. And the way to do that is for the virus to be arcing down and the deaths to be arcing down, and also for people to have confidence that the people near them are not sick. And so you can't just wave it. It's not – I listened to the president last night, and I felt truly like he was talking about his own businesses. 6 of his 7 resort hotels are closed. And he has this sense of impatience, like, when do we get to reopen? And I think that's okay. I think he's right in the sense that this is going to be a bad month. It might be a bad 2 months. But I, like you, feel like we're not focusing on the right thing. There is a relatively simple solution, which is roll out testing so we're not flying blind. We are literally trying to understand the weather in 1948. Without satellites, without knowing what's coming. And if we could map where the virus is in the United States in real time, which we could do, we have Google, we've uploaded every bit of information in the world onto the internet, we can figure out how to make good, quick, reliable tests that are relatively inexpensive. That's what we should spend the next week, 2 weeks doing, and we should have spent the last 2 months doing. So.
I think it's funny. Let me read you a tweet from a senator. Two tweets. When it comes to how to fight coronavirus at pandemic, I'm making my decisions based on healthcare professionals that, like Dr. Fauci and others, not political punditry. And the second tweet says this: try running an economy with major hospitals overflowing, doctors and nurses forced to stop treating some because they can't help all, and every moment of gut-wrenching medical chaos being played out in our living rooms, on TV, on social media, and shown all around the world. third tweet, there is no functioning economy unless we control the virus. The senator who tweeted those three things was Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, not some raving lunatic on the left. I think what happens is if you say, hey, baby, we're back. America's back and going. There is no choice because you can't wave a wand and make America come back. America, most of America isn't going to leave their house. If right now you opened up all the restaurants in Memphis, you know what would happen? We'd have empty restaurants open in Memphis. Like, it's people aren't just going, particularly if you then get to the point that Scott Morris was just talking about, where 18,000 people are in the hospital when we have 2,000 hospital beds. People aren't going to go out and party on Beale Street and fill up Beale Street. FedEx isn't going to open all of its offices. AutoZone isn't going to open all of its offices because there will be liability issues. So you, like, that's, it's not a choice. There is no choice here. It's a false choice.
Right.
That's not an option.
Well,
they just, the people who say that just want America back to be the way it is. And I get that. It was. I do too. But you can't wave a wand and make that happen. You can't say, well, this was an interesting 2 weeks. Resume partying, people.
Right. It's an effort to rally us to normalcy. And Americans really want to do the right thing. And we want to be rallied to the cause. I just think that's not the right cause to be rallied to. The cause to be rallied to is, let's get back to the slogan is, slogan in Memphis is great, safer at home. Let's get back to work safely. And the way to do that is to be able to look to your right and your left with confidence and know that people are not, you know, people are not carrying the disease. I think Scott made this point. If he didn't make it today, he's made it previously. He did make it today. It's so unusual to have a disease that is furiously taking over your body and during which you are capable of making everybody around you sick and you don't know you have it. And that's, you know, that's why we need good, quick, universal testing. And that's how you look, it's going to be, you know, there are lots of people who are going to have trouble literally buying food, paying the rent. That's why we're about to spend $1.2 trillion helping the American economy. I wish we'd spent one-tenth that, $120 billion, 8 weeks ago, getting the tests ready. And you could say, well, but we're here now. Don't look backwards. But that effort needs focus now because you, Jeff Calkins, are the one who said, can you imagine in September 100,000 Michigan fans in a football stadium cheering on their team? Only if everybody in Ann Arbor is confident that there's not much virus around and it's okay to go to the football stadium. Because now we are seeing what is happening and we know that this is serious business.
All right, last question. You're in Washington. What's the state of our bill here moving through the Senate and the House, the Senate in particular?
The state is that they literally negotiated all night. Secretary of Treasury Steve Mnuchin was apparently up on Capitol Hill. They've given the Treasury Secretary his own office space on the Senate side, apparently. And they said they were very, very close. And they have not, in fact, announced an agreement. But if Schumer and Mnuchin, Schumer on the Democratic side and Mnuchin from the Trump administration, were negotiating and are optimistic, they know what the sticking points are. I think Mnuchin really does have a genuine sense of urgency about the economy, and I think Secretary Schumer does too. So I think we'll see something today. I don't think anybody in America is getting a check by, you know, April 4th or 5th or 6th, which was what they were hoping. But I sure hope they cut checks very, very quickly because people who, you know, if you work in a barbershop, if you work in a nail salon, if you work in all kinds of businesses that face, you know, ordinary customers where you take care of people every day, those folks need a paycheck. They don't have $400,000 in the bank to live out the next 2 years not working.
Charles, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Love being on the show. Have a
Thanks.
Good day.
That is Charles Fishman. You can read any of his books. He wrote one on Walmart. He wrote one on water. And his latest one is about everything America did to get to the moon and everyday Americans did to get us to the moon. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to GP. GP had thoughts about the national championship game. That was all the talk yesterday, and he had Antonio Anderson on. We'll revisit that with him, as well as other sporting issues. Chris Harrington after that. I don't know if you saw this, Jeffrey. Chris Harrington issued what he called a final he's looking back at the Grizzlies season. That was ominous. Did you see that? A final report on the point guards, I think, went up today.
Yeah.
Final? Final? We'll have to ask Chris about 10, that.
10:48 yesterday, coronavirus officially broke me. So I'm officially a dead person.
10:48?
10:48 a.m., yes.
Why 10:48?
That was just the moment that I just looked at the clock, and I'm like, I'm officially.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm out. I'm tapping out. And after that, Jessica Benson. We got a full show. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkin Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
For Memphis, whether it's sports or information that matters to you, we're the Mid-South leader. Sports, sure, but also local information that matters. We care, and we're the most relevant FM talk station around. Thanks for choosing 92.9 FM ESPN, more than sports. Now, more than ever, always free, always on, and always your first choice in Memphis. Broadcasting on the radio.com free app. Favorite 92.9 FM ESPN.
5-Hour Energy is energy on the go. But what if you're not going anywhere for a while? Then 5-Hour Energy is energy for getting stuff done while you're stuck at home. Like doing an honest day's work for your boss. Getting rid of old clothes.
My old bell bottoms.
Scouring the grout in your shower. Working out on that old stationary bike. And so much more. Go to the store or order online at shop5hourenergy.com. 5-Hour Energy. Energy for hunkering down.
The great thing about facts? They're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Find it at Firestone Complete Auto Care.
It's flaky. It's hard to spell. It's the croissandwich deal at Burger King. Now get two croissandwich sandwiches loaded with eggs, cheese, and sausage or bacon for just $4. Or mix and match with a biscuit breakfast sandwich, now two for $4 at Burger King. And breakfast? It just got way better with BK Cafe. Now get any size hot coffee for just 50 cents. Plus creamy frappes and refreshing iced coffee starting at just $1 each. BK Cafe, now at Burger King. Limited time only. Choose from sausage, egg and cheese, ham, egg and cheese, or bacon, egg and cheese, biscuit, or croissandwich sandwiches. No substitutions.
Hello, you know my voice, don't you? Well, just this once, let me tell you something without you asking me first. Now you can complete the census online. Just go to 2020census.gov. The census cannot share your response. More importantly, you can help inform how billions in funding will be spent each year on things in your community. Complete the census online, by phone, or by mail. Shape your future. Start here at 2020census.gov, paid for by U.S. Census Bureau.
Are you tired of paying cart fees at your country club or tired of paying green fees every weekend at the local public courses? Well, don't you worry, because Irene Golf and Country Club has you covered. Sign up now through May 31st, and you can enjoy a championship-caliber golf course for all ages and skill levels 7 days a week for just $140 a month. Cart fees and range balls are included in the deal. Again, only $140 a month. Don't miss out on this one-time promotion. Irene Golf and Country Club, located off Hacks Cross by Shelby Drive.
Protect your workplace and your employees. To help mitigate the dangerous effects of flu and coronaviruses, call Hi-Low Commercial Services today. They offer complete deep cleaning and sanitizing services with chemicals that kill the flu and coronaviruses for schools, churches, medical facilities, office buildings, residential, and more. And they'll customize their cleaning services to meet your specific needs. It's time to put safety first with Hi-Low Commercial Services. Call Andy right now, 901-361-3054. That's 901-361-3054.
When was the last time you read the Constitution? Specifically, Article 1, Section 2. The founding fathers thought it was critical to count the population every 10 years so that congressional representation would be based on facts. And it also helps inform how billions in funding are spent every year. The census is our opportunity to be heard. And if you think about it, our civic duty.
Shape your future. Start here. Complete the census at 2020census.gov. Paid for by U.S. Census Bureau.
Your business ideas need room to run wild. But there's no room for error when you're raising the bar. A reliable partner can make a real difference. That's the role of a realtor. An irreplaceable expert who represents your values. A reassuring voice of reason helping you research and reach the right decisions. So you can run your business without running the risk. Is your agent a realtor? Look for the R. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. That's who we are.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
It's been interesting during this period to see how people handle all this. And I mean, in, you know, the Scott Morrises of the world, heroes out there, and everyday people and business owners. And Howie over at Robert Irwin Jewelers has been, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook posts or the way he's conducted his business, he's just a damn good Memphian. And he sent an email saying that now Robert Irwin Jewelers is closed to the public in terms of just walk-in. But they do online shopping, phone purchases, and curbside delivery, curbside pickup. So all you have to do is go to rijewelers.com. And if, by the way, you're on the website, you have questions, you can either live chat or call and talk to a real Robert Irwin Jewelers associate. You can also shop via FaceTime and Google Chat. And every online order is shipped with a box of Dinstall's chocolates. Again, they have curbside pickup as well. They also do this thing where they have online Facebook auctions. There, what you do is you go to facebook.com/RIJewelers to see when the next auction will take place. You bid on an item. You're going to be home. This is sort of like, Jeffrey, this is way to kill time, isn't it? And to get something beautiful for the person who you're now seeing 24 hours a day. This could fill the void that gambling
right. has left me.
You can bid on an item, and if you win free, Robert Irwin Jewelers will ship it to you. If you win, Robert Irwin Jewelers will ship it to you free of charge. Again, that's facebook.com/RIJewelers. The point, and gift cards at a discount. You can get a $70 gift card for $100. You can get a $100 gift card for $70 or a $1,000 gift card for $700. So when the world reopens, you will be able to buy the person who, again, you've looked at for 24 hours a day now, something beautiful. RIJewelers.com. Joined now by GP, Gary Parrish. Gary Parrish is the host of the Gary Parrish Show, 4 to 6 every single day. He is a National College basketball columnist for CBSSports.com, a multiple Emmy-winning television personality and a rising star on the field of meteorology. On Twitter, at Gary Parrish, CBS. Hey, Gary, I'm as late as getting to you these days as you have been typically hard getting to me.
Hey, first and foremost, no jokes about used to be. We all could be used to be pretty soon. Like, it's not a laughing matter. We work in a world that relies on sports, and we have no sports.
Aren't you glad that you have – I have two jobs. Aren't you glad you have multiple jobs? I mean, I'm serious. And then I – like – and if you're in a household that is married and has two incomes, you're lucky, right? I certainly know people who are one-income households with one job who have lost that job. And I don't know what the hell you do then. I don't know what you do then. I feel incredibly lucky that I have two jobs. So if one of them goes away, I have another job. I'm not saying that the other one won't go away too, but, I mean, it's a scary time.
No, in all seriousness, every once in a while somebody will ask me, like, why do you do all of these things that you do? You know, you're hosting podcasts and you're doing a radio show and you're flying back and forth to New York and you're in studio and you're on the sideline and you're ranking basketball teams every morning. And sometimes people confuse that with ambition. Like, oh, man, he just wants to be everything. And the truth is, if I'm being honest, I gave up on that a long time ago. I don't really have many dreams anymore as it relates to my career. Like, I'm happy with what I have. And my goal over the past few years, even way before the pandemic struck our world, is just to keep what I have. Like, the reason I work myself to death throughout basketball season is not because I'm that ambitious. It's because I'm that insecure. I don't take it for granted that I'm allowed to do all of these things that I do. And so I would never give up on any of them because I was always scared of what might happen if I was forced to not have some of them. And, you know, as I sit here right now, everything's cool. But I understand that it might not be someday. I mean, here's the truth. I do a radio hit during basketball season in a market every week, and I get paid to do it every week. And I don't know that I'll get paid for what I've done, because it's a locally owned radio station, and they don't know if they're going to be around in a month, because local advertisers are dropping off one after another. And so that's a long-winded way of answering your question. Yes, I'm thankful that I have multiple jobs and multiple incomes, because these are scary times. And not just scary times for restaurant owners or restaurant workers. They're scary times for basically everybody. I mean, we're sort of laughing about it, but it's not, you know, I don't know what our profession is going to look like, you know, 1 year from now. I haven't taken anything for granted for a while. You know, when you have young children, it sort of resets the clock on everything. But I don't think anybody should be taking anything for granted right now.
No, it's and I don't. I don't know anyone in the world who isn't feeling economic anxiety. And some, it's flat out economic panic and despair. And I'm mindful of that as I think about my economic anxiety. But there's no one who isn't feeling economic anxiety. There's no one in my, I have not eight siblings. There's none of them, none of us who aren't feeling economic anxiety. Of course, you have to be, you know, I don't know if Bill Gates is feeling economic anxiety, but like, I don't know how everyone's feeling economic anxiety. It's just sort of where we are now. What do you make of this, by the way, though? I want to ask you this question. What do you make of the whole, listen, we can't crush our economy in the interest of stopping this. It's bad. It's bad. But old people are going to die. And I'm sorry, old people. We had a lieutenant governor of Texas said, I'm a grandfather and I'm willing to die in order to keep America shopping and great and the economy going. And in the end, the economy is going to kill just as many people as the crushed economy and do as much damage as the coronavirus. So let's plow ahead with the economy, get back to work, get back to partying, and screw the coronavirus and make America great again.
Yeah, well, that guy's a...
I think you could say a-hole, GP.
I feel like all rules are off. That I was infuriated last night when I saw that guy. Because, first and foremost, if he's actually willing to die, I'll take him up on that offer. Uh-huh. I don't think he is. I think what he's willing to do is get back to normal life, and then when he gets sick, you know what he's going to do? Show up at the hospital and take up one of those beds Dr. Morris was talking about earlier in the show. So, like, he's not just willing to die. He's willing to risk whatever it is he's risking, and then when he gets sick, he's going to go to the hospital just like everybody else who gets sick. And that's ultimately the problem. And I do feel a little silly talking about this in these ways because, like, I'm not – when I come across as a know-it-all, don't ever get it confused. I'm only feel like a know-it-all relative to normal people, not next to Charles Fishman or Dr. Morris. Like, I'm the third I rank third in terms of intelligence and education in the first hour of the Jeff Calkins show today, and fourth if we're counting you. But, like, the idea that serious people are going on television and telling other people that we need to just get back to normal activities runs counter to everything every medical official, every serious medical official in this country is telling us. It runs counter to what they're telling us in Italy. It runs counter to what they're telling us in Germany. It runs counter to, again, I can't find a doctor who agrees with that lieutenant
governor. Or a country. England actually was about a week ago. They were going to say, yeah, hell with it. And then they just shut down completely.
And by the way, and the other thing is, like, it wouldn't work. Like, if
that's
President
the real
Trump
issue.
Goes,
that's the
yeah.
issue. Go ahead.
Like, if President Trump comes on television Monday and says, you know what? Our country's not meant to shut down. Let's get back at it. I can just tell you my kids aren't going back to school, and my wife's not reopening her store, and my family is not going to Silky's on Saturday. Most people with even a little bit of a brain understand at this point what we're dealing with and what the, you know, what the risks are. You know, with trying to live your life the way you lived your life 2 months ago. Like, I happen to live in a state where the governor has done literally nothing except encourage people to pray. Like, think about that for a second. That's the guy who runs the state of Mississippi. He hasn't closed any beaches. He's not closing restaurants or bars. He's not discouraging large gatherings. He's just saying, like, pray a little harder, you know? Like, wake up tomorrow morning and pray. But I don't need that guy
An interesting question, though, then. Does that mean that that because he hasn't done anything, is Mississippi booming now? Are all the schools open? Are all the restaurants filled? Are all the that's what you're suggesting, right? Yeah.
Well, here's my point. Most people don't need that guy, that nimwit, to tell us what to do. Like, I'll listen to Dr. Fauci. I don't have to listen to the governor of Mississippi. But even if the governor of Mississippi came out and not only didn't discourage all of these things that he should be discouraging, but encouraged people to get back at it. Like, we're not getting back at it. Some people will, because this state, more than most states, is filled with complete idiots. But it won't be back to normal. There's no way at this point to get it, quote, back to normal by snapping your fingers, because most people are smart enough. Not all, certainly not all, but most people are smart enough to know the dangers in trying to do that. And it's why it's frustrating to watch, again, serious people on national television shows that have real audiences that eat up whatever it is being said, to watch that and have that person say what he said. It won't make me do anything but roll my eyes, but it'll give other people whatever it is they need to try to get back to normal. And all it does is make this flattening of the curve more difficult than it otherwise would be. Like, that guy, we all go on radio, or people in our jobs, go on radio, go on television, and we say things. What that guy said last night on television is a reckless and irresponsible thing.
Putting aside everything else, like the morality of just letting people die or whatever else, the epidemiology or whatever. Maybe you think all medical people are eggheads and geeks and whatever else and like that. That's all fine. Even if all that's true, I think you're exactly right. The point is, it wouldn't work. If you say, okay, America, back at it, America isn't coming back at it. And so there is no way out except for through, basically. It would be like if Kevin Durant said, you know what, I'm sick of rehabbing this Achilles. I'm done with it. Like, I did this for 2 weeks. It's boring. I'd rather be playing basketball. I wasn't built as a basketball player to be shut down. And he just said, give me that damn basketball, and he went out on the court. He'd fall down. Like it wouldn't work. And it's the same thing. You can wish this away all you want. The only way out is through, and the only impact of people who don't take it that seriously, or who say we should just, is they lessen the effectiveness of the only way out. That they make it harder to do what needs to be done.
Yeah, they don't make it the country better. They just make our issue worse. And I guess people need to see it to believe it. Right. You know, like, you got to have your mom end up in the hospital. You got to have your dad end up dead. I personally don't need to see it to believe it. It's just like Charles said earlier today. We don't watch the Weather Channel and see these forecasts and argue with them. We don't say, well, just because they say a hurricane's on the way, I can't see it out my window, so I don't believe it. Like, we trust what the smart people are telling us. And if you're unwilling at this point to trust what the smart people are telling us, then, I can't help you. Then you're exactly what it is I call you all the time.
talking to Gary Parrish from the Gary Parrish Show. We'll do a little sports here just for fun. You talked extensively on your show, and you had Antonio Anderson on, et cetera. Where do you think that Memphis team, you think that Memphis team, if it were reassembled and there were an NCAA tournament starting up tomorrow, would win the NCAA tournament?
In 2008?
Yeah. No, today.
I think that Memphis team would be better than any team in the 2020 season. Yes, I think that Kansas team would have been better than that. Kansas team has the best adjusted efficiency margin of the KenPom era, which spans 19 years. It's the second best. The only one better is 2015 Kentucky. So that Kansas team was awesome, and that was one of the things that. I don't know. Rewatching the entire game from start to finish on Sunday, that was the biggest thing that popped off the screen to me. As somebody who just spent, 4 months watching college basketball, those two teams, that Kansas team and that Memphis team, they would have been a big, big problem for literally anybody else in the country this season.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.